This is James R. Copeland, director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm here with Ilya Shapiro, a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute and the editor of their ever-useful Cato Supreme Court Review. Ilya, thanks for joining us here today. We're here to talk about Arizona v. United States, the controversial case that was argued in the Supreme Court this morning concerning the Arizona immigration law. Tell us a little bit, Ilya, about what that immigration law really is, A, and then B, what is the actual challenge being launched that's reached the Supreme Court to the law? This is the federal government challenging the Arizona law, and what's the basic claim they're making?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Jim, and I should add to that accurate bio that you gave that I'm also a Manhattan Institute sponsor, so happy to contribute to your efforts there.
Oh, we appreciate that.
The law is more than one basic provision, and there's been a lot of misunderstandings in the media about what this involves. First of all, the case has nothing to do with racial profiling or discrimination on ethnicity or anything like that. It's actually, when you get down to it, a pretty boring and technical legal matter involving whether particular provisions of the state law conflict with the federal law. And most of the state law, the so-called SB 1070, has been in effect for almost 2 years now. There are other states who have passed copycat laws, some that go farther than Arizona's, but Arizona kind of set the mark. And the only four provisions of it that were ever enjoined by the lower courts and that are now at issue before the Supreme Courts are the following. First, Section 2B, if you're following along at home with the actual legislation, which requires police to check the immigration status of anyone they've lawfully detained when they have reasonable suspicion to believe that person's been in the country illegally. So they've already stopped them for whether it be speeding or suspicion that they've stolen something or drugs, or they've already stopped them or arrested them, and they have further reasonable suspicion to think that they're here illegally. And then if they have that, they have to check with the proper federal authorities about their immigration status. Second, Section 3, which makes it a state crime to violate federal alien registration laws, so it doesn't create new registration requirements or green card requirements or anything like that, but makes it a state crime to violate the federal registration laws. Section 5C, which makes it a state crime for illegal aliens to apply for work or work as independent contractors. And Section 6, which allows the warrantless arrests when police have probable cause to believe that a person has committed a crime that makes them subject to deportation. These are the only four provisions that the Supreme Court took up this morning. There's a lot others that, as I said, were put in and are in effect regarding police stopping vehicles that they suspect are smuggling, engaging in human smuggling, redefining what it means to intentionally employ illegal aliens, requiring state officials to work with federal officials. I mean, there's a lot of harboring and transportation of aliens. There's a lot of these provisions that have already gone into effect, a lot of which the government did not challenge, and a couple of which they lost on, and the federal government did in the lower courts. So only those four provisions that I mentioned, generally considered to be the more controversial ones, are what the Supreme Court took up this morning.
Interesting. And so, as I understand the case here, it's a preemption case, right? I mean, I typically focus on things like tort law rather than these constitutional law questions you wrestle with. But
you're a real lawyer, I see.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but when I do constitutional law, it is often in this sort of preemption context where we've got a overarching scheme of federal regulation like the Food and Drug Administration regulations on warning labels, and we're trying to figure out to what degree that preempts or doesn't preempt state law. So I know a little bit about preemption. That's really what this case is about, right? It's whether the federal government's scheme of regulation preempts this state law. Right,
and preemption is a technical legal term meaning conflict with, because in the Constitution we have the Supremacy Clause, which says that any properly constituted federal law or treaty, or the Constitution itself, of course, trump state law, that the law of the land is the law of the land, and states can't, even if they don't like it, they can't contradict federal law. So the issue here is whether those four provisions that I described are preempted conflict with existing federal law. And the government brought this suit to say, that they do for differing reasons, because there's different types of preemption that we can have, either direct preemption, that is, a state law just goes against, contradicts what a federal law says, or implied preemption, meaning that federal government has legislated in certain ways or decided not to legislate in the particular area, but otherwise, but in general, reserves the right to and is considering itself to be the sole master of the legislation in that area, and it's saying that the state's law is interfering or intruding into that area, into that legislative space that the federal government has reserved to itself.
Got it. And this is largely a question of implied preemption, more or less, as I read it. That's right?
It is. I think the only real direct preemption is in the federal alien registration laws. That's the second provision I talked about, Section 3. That you know, that says that you know, there can be no other registration requirements than what are set out here. And indeed, when you think about it, in the first place, that makes sense in the sense that states can't have their own entry requirements or green card requirements, or we don't agree that this type of person should be granted asylum, we'll have this other category. That really does directly get into the federal government's prerogative to regulate naturalization and immigration and the border and things like that. But here the issue is, the state here and in the other sections is saying, well, we're just paralleling federal law. We're saying what already is illegal under federal law, it is now going to be illegal under state law, and our law enforcement is going to be required to enforce those by checking with federal authorities to see if those people indeed are violating that. It came out quite clearly in the questioning this morning. The justices were really trying to figure out what the government's theory was, whether there actually was direct or implied preemption, particularly in the provision 5C about punishment for applying for work. Didn't Congress already decide in 1986 when it put together a comprehensive scheme to only punish employers, not employees? Did they already decide that states shouldn't be doing anything more here? Versus for Section 2B, the first section about cops checking the immigration status of people they've detained, that's just in line with federal law. The court seems to be saying, and if federal enforcement priorities change at the proper discretion of of the Secretary of Homeland Security or the President, can those things all of a sudden not be preempted anymore under a different policy?
Right.
So they're trying to really discern whether there is a conflict of the law, be it direct or implied, or whether the government is just simply saying, well, the states are annoying us here. They're not exactly conflicting, but they're not doing what we would do if we were them. Because if it's the latter, seems to be like the court is going in that direction, at least for the first and last provisions that I mentioned in terms of the actions of the local police, then that would be upheld. But again, if the states are intruding in some way, like with the registration laws or the employee or would-be employee sanctions, then those would be more likely to be held to be preempted.
Yeah, the interesting colloquy I recall reading in the transcript, something about you can't really unpreempt the law if the executive changes its mind or something like that, right?
Actually, even more than that, the Justice Sotomayor, of all people, said at one point, "I'm terribly confused by your answer." And another point, she said that the Solicitor General's argument wasn't selling well, so what else do you have? And that's specifically with respect to that provision about, well, our resources are being shifted in ways that we want in different ways. The states are enforcing provisions we don't want to enforce, that sort of thing. Well, if your enforcement priorities change, if there's a different, even if you already allow states to do this, so your problem is now that the states are requiring their local law enforcement to enforce the federal law, all of a sudden that gets preempted, and that can't be the case. I've labeled that in other writings theory of preemption by executive whim, which is not the way that we do the law.
Right. It's sort of far abreast from what Congress has actually done. Now, one of Justice Sotomayor's concerns that she raised with Paul Clement, who was arguing the case for Arizona, was this question of how long the state could actually detain these folks under this 2B provision. What do you make of that question and her line of logic there? And some of the other justices, including the say more conservative leaning justices like Justice Kennedy, were sort of echoing those concerns, I thought.
Ultimately, I I'm not sure that'll play a role in the eventual opinion, because that's really a Fourth Amendment claim. And are the police doing things that are unreasonable, holding people unreasonably, whether people that they've already arrested but not charged, whether just detaining them like in a traffic stop? And issues like that will need to be resolved on a case-by-case basis. If somebody alleges that, you know, they were put in jail over the weekend and nobody came to see them and they were just held for no particular reason, that could be a violation. But you know, the issue isn't so much that they're being held, but why they're being held, on what basis, and a somewhat related but still different issue of, well, won't this sweep in too many U.S. citizens and others that wouldn't be in any of these government databases that the cops would be checking? Because indeed, there is no national registry of U.S. citizens. So if the response comes back, well, we don't have this person registered anywhere, then there's a danger that you know, U.S. citizens who just happen to have gone out for a run or whatever without their driver's license will be held. And those issues, I think, will turn mostly on probable cause and how narrowly the Supreme Court construes the power, if it upholds it, of Arizona to require its officers to detain people in this manner for these reasons.
So it might come up as more of an as-applied challenge, a Fourth Amendment or a 14th Amendment equal protection type of claim down the road.
Or a Sixth Amendment claim in terms of what is discoverable, whether the government's, or admissible, what is the government's evidence, how do they keep their records, is there sloppy record keeping, things like that. So there could be, yes, as-applied, meaning as cases come up, and similar with racial profiling or what have you, there might be challenges brought, you know, I was stopped only because I was Hispanic looking or was speaking Spanish or something like that, which is impermissible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Certainly the justices seem to be wrestling with it, but your take is they're not going to do it. Now the other sort of theory that was out there that was interesting, and I'm not sure anyone was pushing this theory other than Justice Scalia, although some of the other justices were following up on his line of thinking. And Justice Scalia seemed to be suggesting that once the federal government makes a facial determination that this person is illegal, that they're not supposed to be in the United States, that regardless of what the federal government wants to do with the person, the state could literally throw the person out. They don't have to keep the, you know, they could forbid the person from even being in the state in any way, shape, or form. What do you make of that argument?
I think he put it a little, Scalia did, surprise, surprise, a little more rhetorically stronger than what he actually means, if I'm trying to read between his lines even, in that, states are sovereign in lots of different ways. They regulate lots of different things without federal interference or jurisdiction in those areas. Some things have concurrent jurisdiction. Both federal and state governments can legislate in those areas. And I think what Justice Scalia is saying is, look, just like states can stop, you know, Arizona can stop a shipment of fruit from California if it thinks that they're disease-ridden or have some sort of bacteria that'll harm their crops or what have you. Similar to that, Arizona can do things to under its general power to legislate as a sovereign for the health, safety, welfare of its citizenry, can detain people that are, you know, not there legally under federal law. Again, they can't create their own standards of who can be in the country illegally.
Right.
But if they're paralleling, this is the theory I think Scalia was saying, if they're just following federal law, they can enforce that to the hilt. Now, I'm not sure that means that they can deport them, as it were, from Arizona, you know, bust them to the border with New Mexico or California or what have you, and let them off there, or establish border checkpoints between, you know, with other states and check people's, status at those borders. That's probably too strong. But if it's simply enforcing federal law and detaining people and holding them pending federal review or what have you, that seems to be a way that the sovereignty can play in that area. Now, maybe Justice Scalia means even something stronger than that, but I'm reading kind of, you know, maybe I'm coloring my own views on this, but that seems to be a reasonable interpretation of what state sovereignty in this area might mean.
Okay, so now the final question everyone wants to know, and that is, first of all, A, what do you think the Supreme Court's going to do here? And then B, what do you think the Supreme Court should do here?
Well, this is a harder one both to analyze and to predict, really, than a lot of the cases that I follow, the big constitutional ones, because preemption analysis is clause by clause, section by section, and very technical, whether you're dealing with the FDA provisions that you mentioned, any type of regulatory regime, immigration no less. I think, it's hard to read the tea leaves. So first of all, there's 8 justices because Justice Kagan is recused.
Right.
If it's 4-4 on any of the provisions, then the lower court, the Ninth Circuit opinion, is simply affirmed without an opinion from the Supreme Court. So other courts that are going to be looking at the Georgia, South Carolina, other laws are not going to be bound by that. So you need 5 justices to overturn, to vote for Arizona. I think certainly on the first and last provisions, the one in dealing with what law enforcement is required to and can do, it seems like there were going to be at least 5 votes to reverse the Ninth Circuit in Arizona's favor. The other 2 provisions, the criminalizing making a state crime to violate federal registration laws and criminalizing looking for work and working independently while illegal, those have a harder road to hoe, I think, and it's really tough to predict where that would go. Now, I'm on the record. I've written before that I think probably 3 of the 4 will be upheld. Even the registration one looks to me like enough of a paralleling without creating a new type of state law. But the one that's really in trouble is the creation of the new sanctions on employees. So I think, if I had to put it down how I think they should do, it's probably to uphold 3 of the 4. Now, that's just a matter of constitutional law. We legal theorists, scholars, pundits always like the chance to describe areas where we think something is constitutional or legal but bad policy, and this for me is one of those areas. I think SB 1070 and especially the more extreme versions in other states is not the way to go. It harms the state economies, it separates law enforcement from the communities that they're meant to police, and it skews resources away from what I like to call real crime or even national security. So this would not, I think there's a national comprehensive immigration reform that's needed, but it's understandable here. The states are frustrated, people are frustrated, there's no action from Congress and the President, so these states are acting. So I think they have a lot of leeway, a lot more leeway than a lot of people might think to regulate in these areas. Again, not regulating immigration, but regulating things like employment and crime, paralleling federal law, those sorts of things. So I think it's going to be a split decision of some kind here. It'll give some good guidance for states going forward and hopefully keep the immigration issue in the national discourse, so at least after the election we might have some movement on the national level.
Well, it's been extremely helpful and informative, Ilya. We really appreciate it. Again, this is Jim Copeland, a director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, with Ilya Shapiro of the Cato Institute, discussing Arizona v. United States. You can find this and other podcasts at our legal website, pointoflaw.com. Thanks, Ilya.